Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We have a very important topic and a wonderful guest with us today. Before beginning that topic and meeting our guest, I have to do what I do at the beginning of every program, and that is appeal to you, our listeners, to let us know if we could help you further. You know, we try to provide various topics throughout the year, but if you feel a need that we should touch on a particular topic, we'd be happy to try to do that for you. But we have to hear from you. We have to know. And I'd like to give you two ways to reach us. One everyone could use, even if you're not on a computer. And that would be simply the mail, putting a stamp on an envelope and letting us know and through a letter what you would like us to address. Now, the address you would write on that envelope is Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. Again, Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. Once again, 06836. If you're on the computer and would like to email us, please do so at Clemons10@AOL.com. That's Clemons, the number 10, at AOL.com. If I'd like to invite you to please go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today, and you can find that at spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. Besides features and articles, you could also find our radio program, Thoughts for the Week. And there are a number of those archived there, so there may be different topics you would like to listen to. And, of course, being on the computer, your personal computer, you could listen to these programs at your leisure. Well, the time has come to welcome our guest and begin this week's program. Now, the topic will be behavioral health, and this is a biggie in this particular. It's always an important issue, but seemingly the from government to daily life and every area, this area of behavioral health is a big issue. We are most fortunate to have the Director of Behavioral Health Services for Catholic Charities of Fairfield County. And we're delighted to welcome Richard Madwood. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Father.
And delighted to have you here again. What we'd like to do to begin with is first maybe to introduce our listeners to what Catholic Charities Fairfield County does, especially in your area where you're located, and how people might be able to reach you.
Sure. Our behavioral health services are located in Danbury at 405 Main. And our other clinic is located in Norwalk at 120 East Avenue. We service children, adolescents, families, couples, adults in outpatient counseling services. We also have a on-site medical director that offers medication assessments if there's a need for clients that need additional tools for medication to manage their emotional issues.
And I think one of the best ways to learn more and reach more might be to just on the computer to go to...
Yeah, just go to Catholic Charities of Fairfield County website. Mm-hmm. All of our programs are listed there, our behavioral health services, immigration services, food programs, child care, senior nutrition. They're all located on there with direct contacts to those services. They each operate independently in their own buildings around the Fairfield mm-hmm. County area, but that would be the quickest way. We also have a Facebook... Oh. The Catholic Charities Facebook site, and that's where we have been really focusing on all the wonderful things that happen every week in our 32 programs. So that's kind of fun to look at. That there's all kinds of activities that that are posted there weekly about the wonderful work that Catholic Charities provides.
That's terrific. And in fairness to our listeners, I think it's important to let you know that we are broadcasting from Fairfield County in Fairfield County, Connecticut, because I know we have many listeners in Massachusetts and also on line. They could be anywhere in the world. But Catholic Charities is not, this is not simply an entity of Fairfield County.
No, Catholic Charities is a national organization. So if I ever wanted to move to wherever, it could be Utah, Florida, there's employment for me, hopefully. But there's similar services just about in every state in this country that Catholic Charities is part of. Yeah.
And I'd like to encourage our listeners that if you do feel that there's a need, you don't know where to turn, really contacting Catholic Charities. And if you live in the United States, it's there in your state. And even though we're talking about events in Connecticut, you'll find, as Richard said, comparable services around. So please feel free to contact Catholic Charities in your area. We have spoken in past programs about your effort. It seems that you, one of your own areas of expertise is addictiveness.
Correct.
And I think that is something that is certainly right on top of today's pile of news. I'd like to talk about the opioid epidemic. Is epidemic a proper term for this? How big an issue is it?
I believe so. That's, I think, a very good word. It seems in the literature, if you track the history of this, some of this problem with opioids can get born out of perhaps an accident on the sports field of a young person playing football or soccer or whatever, and quickly, you know, we go to pain management. And then the pain management medication, for example, oxycodone, has been popular and has been in the news quite a while now. Has become problematic because it's a narcotic, and it's highly addictive. It's highly effective in pain management, however, causes very quick addiction. And in some cases, what will happen is that once the person heals from an accident, whether it be a car accident or sports accident, or even at home if you're working at home and you end up getting a pain prescription from your physician, once that is over, once that healing is done, some people will experience the need still for the feeling, and that has led us down the other path of street drugs. And, for example, the use of heroin. So there's been an increase in young people using heroin in this country, and in some cases because it got started with pain management. And then oxycodone is very expensive. It's like $5 a pill, where heroin is $6 for a whole bag. So that can take on a life of its own for some young people seeking to continue that.
You know, I like to underscore what you said too about injury, not necessarily some use an old term, old hippie like person looking for drugs, but I think about anyone who experiences some serious injury that may require pain management. I remember I had my hip replaced, and part of that hip replacement was with pain, were drugs that deal with the pain. I can't even remember the name of them, but. But I understand. Now, my feeling was that it relieved pain, but didn't give any sense of euphoria, except to relieve the pain. Now, what you were saying
you didn't get the right stuff, Father.
Oh, man. I got to call my doctor. Call my doctor. But in many cases, when the pain, when that section of part of the injury or whatever is over, most of these drugs could provide high.
Well, they do. All of the pain management medications provide that. You probably don't remember because you were in pain, maybe. But they all light the brain up. They all get the brain high, and also dull pain. So when the pain is subsided, the brain is still used to getting lit up or high.
By lit up, what does it create in the person? Now, not simply, as you said, a relief of some desire to escape from something, but Does it turn them into a superhero, or what does it do?
Well, it creates a feeling of stability, a feeling of happiness, however brief, 4 hours, like we mentioned at one point. It dulls emotional memories of trauma.
Hmm.
Heroin is always been researched as the most effective substance that doesn't allow the person to feel emotions and memories that are painful. There's been a study done by Fred Street many years ago, in which I bring to my classes, that he studied the variety of substances that people choose to take in life, and started to draw correlations between why is there a percentage of people that always choose heroin? Why do a percentage of people go to cocaine and not heroin? Why do people just choose alcohol but they don't choose marijuana?
Hmm.
So it was a very interesting study. Hmm. Heroin has been proven to be the substance that really suppresses feelings and in distressful feelings. So we often find in our clinics that if someone has had a history of heroin addiction, they usually have significant trauma that was untreated. And so we need to dig down and treat that trauma and hopefully get them away from self-treatment with heroin or some substance like that suppresses that. We need to clean it out just like you would with a physical wound, instead of just putting a bandage on it and then redoing the bandage every couple of days.
I'm sure I'm not using the right word, but let's say replacement substances.
Right.
I have noticed that in certain parishes, many parishes do have Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I remember going to one in the parishes in the school, and just happened to notice with a number of those who were recovering from, or I guess you might say, winning the battle against addiction there, I noticed coffee and cigarettes. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Right.
And I'm saying, wow, they're kind of taking this, which really is super destructive, but they're kind of needing.
Well, again, it goes back to the neuroscience of the brain, the physiology of our brain, and what the brain needs to maintain emotional stability. So when you withdraw from one substance, there's often the need to go to something else. And caffeine is a stimulant. It's in the stimulant classification. Nicotine is a stimulant. So oftentimes we do see that, particularly within AA, if you go to AA meetings and you observe people, some people tend to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. They may have been doing that prior to them becoming abstinent, but we often see that is something that takes a life of its own. But if you look at the quality of life at that point, certainly caffeine and nicotine is giving them a better quality of life than the alcohol and the heroin use. So they're having a better quality of life. It's not disruptive in the way that a strong drug like heroin or alcohol could be. So that's what we think the least of evils, even though we know nicotine's not healthy for you. But in terms of your quality of life, you're able to make decisions and meet goals and function, that certainly is the lesser of the evils. So we don't really push people to release from that unless they say, gee, can you help me give up cigarettes? And then we try to help them do that.
Now, for those particular, clients that come to you, for your assistance, what finally becomes a motivating factors for them that make them make the call or drop in at the office? What have you discovered there?
Well, there is a large variety. I think one category of people are people that have had some kind of a crisis, and they're starting to connect the dots between the crisis and what kind of decisions they've been making in life. and they realize that the decisions that they're making has been leading to this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And so they seek professional help to get some guidance and, okay, how can I manage this particular crisis, and then what can I learn from this crisis that I can integrate into my life going forward so that I can have a better quality of life in terms of my mental health. There usually is some precipitating factor, Father, that people mm-hmm. call for therapy. There's something that is happening in their life or that has come to a crisis or that is moving towards a crisis, whether it's a couple issue or a relationship issue or a child issue. There's something that's come to the surface that they are now motivated to look at.
So is there kind of a clarity of vision in their life, as it were?
Sure.
That now they want to...
Yeah, yeah. Levels of motivation. Different levels of motivation. And the more aware that you are, we all know this, of a problematic issue in our life, that the more likely we can tackle it. But if we're not aware, if we're suppressing it with a mood-altering substance, if we're in denial, then we're not aware. And so if there's problems, the problems just keep sprouting up. Mm-hmm. But once people get to a point where their awareness of the problem, they start to understand that this problem is interfering with their happiness, with their goals, then certainly those are the people that will start to reach out for professional guidance. And the more motivated they are, the better the prognosis.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The more motivated they are.
Hmm. Yeah. So they reach a certain point where they just cannot hide or cover what's going on.
Whatever defense mechanisms they were using for 5 or 10 years begin to disintegrate, and they feel more emotional upset, more pain, more lack of the ability to set goals and meet them.
Well, I know that those with really severe mental issues, those who end up in the hospitals or end up in the criminal justice system, may not be directly the people you deal with. You're dealing with people who come to you.
Yes, well, we deal with mild to severe disorders. So the percentage you just mentioned is in our clinics, people that suffer from schizophrenia, people that are referred by the courts, people that are being released from prisons in Connecticut are also part of our population at both Norwalk and Danbury mm-hmm. clinics. So those particular individuals often need medication management, which we provide, and they do need intensive therapy. Our goal is to help them be free of the legal system. We don't want to see anybody making more poor decisions to be reincarcerated, for example. We don't want to see people living on the streets and ending up at Danbury or Norwalk Hospital because they have a severe disorder. We can help them. The most important piece of those cases that are on the streets and if they have the schizophrenia background is the medication compliance. Mm-hmm. If they can continue on their medication regimen, they can do very well in life. But
they need to realize that their ability to do well is dependent on their
that's one of the tools. Often what can happen in those severe cases is that they take medication for a while and it works.
Mm.
And they wake up one day and they say, gee, I don't think I need to, because most people are anti-medication. Mm-hmm. We don't like to take medication.
Yeah, I don't like to either.
I don't either. I take a statin for my cholesterol, and I keep begging my doctor, do I have to keep taking this? He says, Richard, yes, you do. You manufacture cholesterol. So I go and do it, but we don't like to. I think most people would want to believe that they can manage without medication. But so then those severe disorders often get to a point, as I've been mentioning, that they feel good. They wake up and they feel pretty good and they go, well, I don't really, I really wasn't in favor of this in the first place, so maybe I'm okay now. So they miss it for a few days and they their brain crashes and they call our crisis line at night and end up in our office the next day when they didn't have an appointment, but we try to get them in. And we find out that they weren't taking their medication for a couple of days. So we have to really help them see that this is a very effective tool. But we have, I think the public still has an opinion of physical health versus mental health.
Mm-hmm.
We go to our physician, and if the physician says, Richard, your cholesterol readings are way off the chart, I'm going to have to put you on a statin. I go, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the mental health area, we seem to have a different opinion. We don't like to hear that we can't manage our mental health. We don't like to hear someone say, can we try just a trial of medication for that anxiety and let's do some talk therapy. So we don't go to the medication route. We go very slow in our clinics with this.
Mm.
We try to work with people without medication as long as we can. And if there's red flags and we're not getting anywhere, then we do an assessment for medication. We don't like to push medication, but that's not my point. But I think the public has a difference of opinion of the need for mental health versus physical health. You know?
I think we expect our bodies to go through different
terms, right,
and then finally weaken.
Right.
But maybe the admitting that somehow mentally...
Yeah, well, we feel deficient.
Yeah.
I think when we experience different mental health issues, the belief is, you know, I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I should be in control. This is really psychodynamic psychology here. I shouldn't have to be like this. I'm smarter than that. It's not about intelligence, but I think some people talk to themselves like that.
Boy. Well, you know, I know you have a tremendous amount of staff, highly qualified, many different areas to cover medical and certainly the mental needs. When I was chaplain at the hospital for 15 years, I would often go to the mental health ward and talk to many individuals. A number of them were convinced that they were various divine people, either Jesus or they'd ask me, do you think I am this and am that? What I guess I'm asking, through Catholic Charities being Catholic Charities, do you have also references or for spiritual help along that way, regard to prayer to people who want to maybe be aware of some deficiency in their spiritual life that they'd like to?
Yes. I mean, Catholic Charities is not, we're not there to just serve Catholics. We're there to serve every denomination. I think that's a good point I'd like to say, you know, to our listeners. Oftentimes people see our sign and go, well, I'm not Catholic, so I can't go there. But that's not why we're there. We're there to serve everyone. And if there is a spiritual component, we certainly go with that spiritual component and try to empower that person spiritually. And we can often refer them to their parish if they would like to speak with someone at their parish along with our counseling services. But certainly we respect everybody's spirituality and belief in religion.
Yeah, I know through a number of priest friends of mine along the years who are degreed clinicians in mental health. I guess, you know, we're getting close to the end of the program, and I don't want to have our listeners deficient in any way. What do you think people need to understand about mental health, about reaching out for help, recognizing things in regard or understanding someone else is going through some mental health problems?
Yeah. Well, mental health is, again, I think we have to go back to what we're talking about. It seems to be an area that we continue to struggle with, mental health versus physical health. And I'd like to say, in terms of our mental health, that I would ask our listeners to really try to be as sensitive as they can, you know, to others around them in terms of people's mental health. I mean, we're all experiencing every day stressors that can affect our mental stability. And the more that we can think about this and be aware of this with our coworkers, our families, and be sensitive to experiences in life and not just say, well, that's not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we would be in a better place if we could try to be more supportive of people's experiences every day and to accept that mental health to accept it, that mental health is part of our makeup.
Hmm.
It's not just our physical health. It's part of our makeup. It's almost 50-50, isn't it? Because your mental health can actually cause physical symptoms.
Mm.
Mental health issues can cause physical symptoms. So we really would like everyone to try to understand, to pay attention to their mental health. And you're not a defective or bad person if you think you need to reach out to a professional. And so I think there's still a belief among a certain percentage of people that believe that if you have anxiety or you had depression, whether that there's something really wrong with you, and you know, get away from me, kind of thing. So I think acceptance that we all are living in this together, that we're mental health and we're physical health people, and we need to pay attention to that and feed it just like we feed our bodies.
Mm. But in regard to, let's say, major mental health issues or the ones you deal with, are we talking about, maybe it's both, mostly cure or control?
A little bit of both. Mm. I think mental health issues, there's such a large variety, Father Ray, and it's a case-by-case discussion. Some depressions can be cleared up in a short amount of time. Some depressions take longer. Some people can be stabilized more with their depression, but live with a little depression.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a case-by-case answer. Sometimes there are presenting symptoms that we can clear up, and they don't come back. But it really is it's kind of a hard thing to answer.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a case-by-case scenario.
Also, the final thing is regard to family members who have someone going through a mental health problem. I know we're going to run out of time, but quickly, what do you think they need to realize? That they can't do it, they can't solve the problem for the person, what they need to do?
Certainly they can't solve the problem, but often we do see that family members can learn strategies that can help assist the person that they're not aware of. And also, maybe there's some strategies that they are using that are not helpful,
mm-hmm.
that we can
mm-hmm.
help them look
yeah.
at.
Yeah. Well, we've been delighted to have Richard Madwid, who is Director of Behavioral Health Services for Catholic Charities of Fairfield County here in Connecticut. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Father.
And to all of our listeners, I'd like to thank you for joining us on Thoughts for the Week. Please do so again. Have a great week, everyone.